Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Working my tail off for these moments, man. And this right here is a monster. I'm telling you, it's different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the big ticket, Walt Harris.
All right, welcome to UFC Unfiltered. We have a pretty good show for you today, we hope. Matt and I always hope that we're going to cover, obviously, UFC 249. We have Walt Harris, who is fighting Saturday the 16th. Of course, his Overeem fight, which was canceled due to, you know, his personal tragedy. And then I believe it was rescheduled, and because of the COVID virus has been pushed back. So I'm happy that those guys are finally getting to fight. And also we have two of the Houston Astros who started an MMA podcast. And apparently they're huge fans, Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers Jr. I hope I'm saying Correa's name right. So they have a podcast, and they both play for the Astros. It'd be interesting to hear, too.
Basketball players. I'm excited. No,
Matt, wrong sport.
What?
Wrong sport.
Jimmy, I know it's baseball, but you guys just told me. I didn't. When I saw that we had two ball players on, I thought they were basketball players. But yeah. I do not follow anything with a ball. But let me tell you, Jimmy, you know who got murdered this weekend? This guy in the picks.
Well,
do you feel like a champion?
I didn't want to say. It's not about, I mean, look, anybody could be 5-0 with near perfection. It's not important.
You know who I'm upset with?
I'm going to guess DeCastro.
How did you know that? Jordan DeCastro.
He fought so well in the first, but then again, he had a broken toe or something, Matt. He's hurt. He got hurt when Hardy checked a kick.
So he broke his toe. So that little piggy cost him the fight, you're saying?
This little piggy goes, ow, ow, ow.
I think he hurt his toe. Hit my winning purse, please.
Sprained or broken. It was hurt because he stopped fighting, like being aggressive. And then the commentator said he might have hurt it. And then he lifted his foot at the end to indicate like this is what the problem was.
No. Well, listen, I was so impressed when I saw him. You know, laying down those little sledgehammers. And he's a shorter guy, and he was thrown with bad intentions. I go, this is awesome. I'm a genius. I knew he'd win.
Yeah.
And then it reminds me of, like, if one of our fighters or if myself, like, in between rounds, like, Longo would be like, you're letting this guy back in. You let him back in the fight.
Yeah.
That's what I would hear. And by the way, we're going to talk about some corner work. We're going to talk about corner work.
Also. Yeah, you can hear everything, right?
I'll tell you. Well, back to what Longo was saying. That's what he would say in a fight like that, where you're so clearly winning, and then you let this guy back in.
You let him back.
And that's what he did. For whatever reason, if there might be a good reason, he broke his toe. He has a hurt. I mean, it's a fight. Listen, it's the hurt business. You're going to be hurt. He let him back in, and he never got started again. Never seen a glimpse of what happened in that first round. You never seen it again. So it's like, and even to the point, Greg Hardy, not for nothing. I don't expect you to be, Gordon Ryan on the floor, but that dude doesn't, if you see DeCastro's core, doesn't look like he'd have a tremendous guard. So when he was laying on his back, Jimmy, I know how I am on my back when I'm 30 pounds heavy. It's not that way. So when I seen him laying on the floor and Greg Hardy's all telling him to stand up, dude, But I mean, you're not going to get armbarred. I'd be very shocked if he went in there and got fucking heel hooked. Why do you jump on him, settle into half court, and beat the shit out of him?
Here's what I think. Les Greg Hardy's lack of confidence on the floor. First of all, that guy was on the floor. My guess is DeCastro was on the floor because he was probably hurt, and it took the pressure off his toe. So he probably wanted to – I'm guessing he wanted to stay down there. And Hardy might have taken that as this guy's got something I don't know about because he wants me down here. That, to me, is a lack of confidence on the floor.
And at that point, he was having his way standing up. So I can understand. Yeah. You know? But – I don't know. That raised a little.
You might concern. Be right, yeah.
But Jimmy, I'll tell you right now, I did not move from I was on my couch from 6:30 till midnight.
Moment.
Right? And this fucking is what you know what I did not miss?
What?
The audience. I didn't miss the audience at all. I might prefer it. I know that sounds crazy. They're not, first of all, nobody's getting influenced by people booing or people standing up. That's not happening.
You're right.
You can hear the corner work. And during the round, you hear them. Like, you hear everything. I enjoyed it. I was not taking my eyes off the screen. I was listening to hearing what the corner work would say. And it doesn't hurt that Joe Rogan, Daniel Cormier, and John Anik were fucking great. I enjoy those guys.
They were great.
It was good, dude. Listen, I don't know if I was just jonesing for a fight, but the whole fight card was fucking good. Really good. It lived up to it.
Amazing.
And it was an interesting experience, but I did not feel anything was taken away by not having an audience there. It's
good. I think that of all the sports – because UFC, you know, you're focused in on the cage, on the fighters, and it's black behind it. You can see when the crowd is there, but it's so easy to focus on two guys fighting that, like, you know, wrestling needs an audience because they play to the audience. And baseball, every shot has the fucking crowd in it. Football, the crowd is very apparent. There's something about two guys fighting in a room that's black around them that this works, dude. And for as long as UFC needs to be without an audience, they will be fine without an audience. I like it with a crowd a little better just because it's fun to watch the cheering and Bruce Buffer. But it didn't ruin anything for me. These fights were – what an amazing card.
And we're gonna do a little preview for the card on Wednesday also, obviously.
Yeah. We don't have to talk anymore about that. Like, who cares that I picked Cater? It doesn't matter. You picked him as well.
I picked Cater also.
Yeah, I know. You picked him closer than I did, actually.
But you know what's funny? And when you hear me pick him, I go stoppage in second, third round. I said second first, and then I stopped.
We'll give it to you.
Third round, you know? No, I did not. Listen, Jorgen gave that away. Let's call it.
Yeah.
He's going to kick himself tomorrow, man, because these things like that are going to go wrong in a fight.
Yeah.
And you can't point. No, nobody's going to give a shit what you try to point out. I heard Tony Ferguson had a broken orbital or some shit. Like,
did he?
I mean, we could confirm it, but that's what I was reading. You know? I mean, that dude. I mean, let's go fight. You want to start?
Wow.
Pop. And we also got the baseball guys coming on. What's that podcast called?
I actually don't know. I just know that
they're baseball guys, but they like MMA and they're doing a podcast. They're coming on later. So we could go more into depth in all the fights when they call also.
Of the Walkout podcast, the host. Oh, sorry. Host of the Walkout. I don't have my glasses on. The Walkout it's called.
Okay. The Walkout. Listen, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with this?
Well, we could talk about the Ngannou fight in real time. If you want to. I was not surprised at all. But he blitzkrieged fucking Rozenstruik. And I wonder if that leg kick had anything to do with it. Francis got kicked. And I wonder, because Jairzinho Rozenstruik can kick. And I wonder if he felt that leg kick and just thought, fuck this. I'm not going to stand here and let this guy beat my legs up.
I don't think he gave a shit. I think he went in there throwing bombs. I mean, anything that connects, you could be technically a better striker and hit the guy five times to his one will decapitate you. That's the problem here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and I'll tell you, he's so explosive where even guys that are explosive with the grappling, Curtis Blaydes, Cain Velasquez, they can't even get a hold of him because he touches them. They're going flying. I mean, this guy is just, first of all, what a sweetheart.
He's such a lovely guy.
He's such a He's a lovely guy. He's a, you would never think, like, see, my wife doesn't watch it. She's watching. She goes, oh, is he, how is he when you talk to him? Is he cocky? I go, not at all.
No.
The opposite. You just want to give him like a hug, you know? And by the way, Jimmy, I can't wait to hug you, man. I miss you.
I miss you too.
I know this whole social distancing thing. You better get over that quick when I see you, pal.
I will. I will absolutely. And I believe it. Matt, I'm not even going to mention that I said first round and you said second round. And like when we hug, what do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to go, I picked Cejudo by second round style. Who gives a shit? It's not about that.
The best is, Jimmy, I put this shit on my Instagram, the picks. The last time I'm doing it. Oh, wow. It's as if you picked. It's like, he's like, wow. Some people that are just chiming in. First of all, you destroyed me in it. So they did both our picks, and they're like, man, you should have just listened to your buddy, and all they're chiming in. And I'm just like, fuck you. I'm the former champ, me. Sorry, yeah. Jimmy, I'm sorry. Let's get that erased from the podcast.
No. Everybody knows, and they should hear it from you.
Breakdown like that.
You're the former champ. They should hear from you.
Holy shit, can I not pick them? But listen, man.
Well, Cruz, I don't know about. I kind of agree with the stoppage. I think he recovered quickly, but he looked really hurt for 11 unanswered shots, and his arms were out to the side. I know he was just trying to scramble and get up, but he looked very hurt to me.
It's rough with that. Now, I know that Keith Peterson. I don't know if I told you this before.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy grew up around the block from me. I know that guy forever. And he's an honest, good guy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He's not in there for any kind of spotlight or any kind of controversy. I believe he went to break it up when he was still on the floor. And as he's stepping in, Cruz is coming up. So it's like, yeah, I understand. But he made the decision to stop it already.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, anything in hindsight. It's like, yeah, but look, he's getting up. Yeah, but he already made the decision to come in. So he's coming in and he's getting – so I understand both sides' points.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, man. Like, even Joe Rogan at the end was like, you know, Dom, that was I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, look, you know, what do you think about the 11 unanswered shots type of thing?
Yeah.
You know? And then Dom's like, well, Joe, that's part of the game, you know? And
Joe likes him. So you could tell Joe was trying to, you know, he knew that Dom was really hurt. He had just lost, and he was trying not to be too aggressive with it.
And it's hard for Dom at that point to say, of course he's going to say, well, that's part of the fight game and this and that, but, you know, yeah, that's part of the fight game when they usually step in to break it up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
When the guys have a bunch of unanswered shots, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he looked hurt. He looked hurt to me, and again, I I'm a big Dominic Cruz fan, so I didn't want to see him take more punishment than he had to take.
It was rough. And what do you think about Triple C walking away?
I don't believe it.
You know what? When he was saying it, I didn't believe it.
I don't believe it in the moment.
Just, a tactic maybe to make some more cash. But my thing is, I don't know, man. He said when he walked away from wrestling, he was done. And I don't know. I mean, what else does the guy really got to prove, to be honest? Nothing.
This is the UFC. This is a much bigger thing than wrestling, and this is his career, and he's 33. And not only did he just win, he beat one of the greats of all time without really taking any damage. He took no damage at all. So there's no way a guy – I don't believe the emotion behind it. It was not emotional, at least from what I was watching. I don't know, Henry.
My thing, Jimmy, is – it would have been a little bit of more of an emotional moment with an audience there. That's when an audience would have been better. When they would have been like, no, well, wait, or cheering. So it's kind of like you hear crickets. Like, hey, I'm walking away from the game. There's nothing going on. So it's kind of weird because I don't think we've really seen that before. You know what I mean? Because usually when people are leaving the gloves in there or saying they're done, you know, you have the audience. Oh, man. And it is funny sometimes when Joe or who in there and they're like, all right. And they go to announce the winner. Like, ladies and gentlemen, I think he was fucking around at some point with that. It's not just the whole no crowd thing is just something to get used to, but
yeah,
it didn't bother me at all. But I think it would have been more of an emotional moment if there was a crowd.
You might be right. Yeah, maybe I'm not thinking, I'm not considering that. Maybe we can wait for our first two guests to discuss. Now, who's on first? I don't know who's on first. If it's Walt Harris or
did I mention Ryan Spann, who defeated Sam Alvey? We found him on Looking for a Fight. Dana White Looking for a Fight. That's available on YouTube. It's a fun show, Jimmy.
It sure is.
A million hits, easy, every time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was watching it. I go, this guy looks familiar. I go, oh, shit. That's where we found that guy on the show. So, and he looked great, man. And Sam Alvey, dude, what about that head and arm choke that Ryan Spann had on Sam Alvey from standing? I've seen it done like that before.
Yeah.
I thought he was going out when that was going on. It was sick. You said, and all of a sudden you see the ref. It was like out of a horror movie. Because then you hear the ref going, like, give me, you know, show me you're okay. So you see Sam Alvey, who's already red, turning redder and, like, smiling like a psychopath.
Yeah.
Dude, it was a moment. And when he got out of that, I was like, holy shit, man. I was worried about Spann's arms. And I thought Sam Alvey was going to be going to sleep with a smile on his face. Vicente Luque looked awesome. And Nico Price was in the – he was in the fight.
Yeah.
You know, and I like how he doesn't get discouraged, Nico Price, when things aren't going his way. And he's still in there putting a foot in your face and then having a flurry where he's all over you.
Yep.
But I'll tell you, Vicente Luque, he's a killer, man. He's a guy that's a very, very dangerous striker. And he's got such night and he's got such crisp technique. You know what I mean? Working with Henry Hooft. I loved it.
Yeah, and it was a doctor stoppage because of the eye, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bryce Mitchell defeated Charles Rosa, who we both had on the card. And let me tell you something. Wow.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be more competitive. And I'm not shitting on Charles. First of all,
he's a great fighter.
Props to Charles. Great fighter. And a lot of other fighters weren't weathering any of those storms.
That's right. Because
he was in from a very, first of all, holy shit. He was in bad position to a tight submission, to getting out of a tight submission to a bad position. And that was the story of the fight.
Yeah.
He was dominating positionally. And then when Charles Rosa would try to scramble out from Bryce Mitchell, Bryce Mitchell would sink on a head and arm choke. Oh my goodness. How many twister attempts were there? How many twister attempts were there, Jimmy?
I'm like, he's going to get another one. Listen, he's going to get another one.
If not, in his upcoming fights, we will see, my prediction, we will see more than one in the next year of him getting one. I swear to God, he's going to get it, Jimmy. Because Charles Rosa got out of some, I mean, I'm telling you, 8 out of 10 guys, some guys are real good in jiu-jitsu, but 8 out of 10 are tapping it at or getting caught in that twister or any one of them. Yeah. He was, dude, I'm telling you, this is the deal, Jimmy. You know I'm a jiu-jitsu man. You know
yes,
I love jiu-jitsu.
Yes, you are, through and through.
I love watching jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, in combat, in the UFC used. I can watch the sub-grappling like and the jiu-jitsu tournaments, but I it loses my interest. I like it when if you lose a position or you lose a sub, it makes a difference with you. All right, now I can get elbowed in the face. Now, you know what I mean? Bryce Mitchell got out of that fight clean. I mean, he looked good. And it was like, dude, somebody had a 30-24, I believe. It was such a beautiful display of jiu-jitsu versus a guy, Charles Rosa, who's a very good jiu-jitsu black belt. I mean, look what he did. Look how he just took out Manny Bermudez. And Manny Bermudez is a good ground guy. And he took him out with an armbar on bottom. He was predicting to take Bryce Mitchell's arm home with him.
Yeah, he did.
Not up in here.
That was. Understand? I don't think there was one moment in that fight, as good as Charles Rosa is, that he was actually ahead. There was one decision he made. I don't know if it was in the second or the third, where he seemed like he was having a little success standing, and then he just got too close. And I'm like, I didn't know why he did that. He made one weird decision. Maybe, again, spur of the moment in a fight. It's easy for me to say watching it, but I thought he should have tried to stay away a little longer, and he let himself get wrapped up.
Listen, his fight IQ will grow. He will, gain. He will take a couple steps back. Hopefully, take a whole bunch forward from this.
Sure.
When I see a guy like who has a good guillotine, like Aljo has a great guillotine. When he fought Brian Caraway, he actually went to guard with a guillotine. It cost him that round, possibly the fight. You understand? In a very close fight. So, because what happens is, like, if you're used to tapping guys with that in class, if you don't get it, it doesn't really you know, then you keep going. Maybe you'll get him in a guillotine later. But the thing is this, in five minute rounds, and you're fighting in a situation like this, in an MMA fight, you one loss of position could end a fight, lose a round, and put you on bottom. And that's not what you want. You know what I'm saying? So you really have to know when it's like Verdum when he fought Cain Velasquez. When Cain Velasquez shot in deep and he had his neck, it's like when he knew going down that this dude's tapping. So unless you feel like I've had guys like this 1,000 times before in training, hundreds of times, 1,000 times, I know this guy's going to go to sleep. I got him right where I want him. But he would get him around the neck. And when he'd go to guard, when he'd go down, he wasn't achieving guard. He'd get a lot of times half guard. So you don't have the same leverage on it. So now, you might have his neck, but your lower half's not where it should be. And a guy who knows the floor like Bryce Mitchell is just not going to get tapped.
Right.
And now you got a savage on top of you who knows the ground game, and he's making you pay for it. You know what
Didn't it seem too like Verdum against Olenek? I thought he went for a guillotine a couple of times. He was going for a couple of chokes, but Olenek was so good and so strong, and he did such a good job defensively against a bigger, you know, Verdum outweighs him by about 17 pounds.
Oh, this is my thoughts on that. Olenek, first of all, holy shit. I could have went to high school with both guys. They're both 42. I believe Verdum's 42. I know what the other guy is. I know Olenek is. Olenek, let me tell you something. First of all, he looked in great shape. He looked in better shape than usual, I'm going to say. And I think Verdum looked in worse shape than usual. He looked soft around the middle, and he looked a little flabby. I mean, he's never a guy that's super ripped, but he didn't. And I think – I don't know if he had enough respect for Olenek. I don't know what kind of MMA math he's doing. Maybe he's thinking, all right, Walt Harris, who's going to be on soon, smoked Olenek in the last fight. Look what I did to Walt Harris with my jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? And he thought he was going to play with this guy standing up.
Yeah. Although Harris had no time to.
No, that's true. 100%.
Wasn't that like literally within a week he had taken that fight?
It was the same day.
The day before. Okay, it was really close.
Yeah. But it just shows you how MMA math does. And he looked like a beast since then, Walt Harris. You know what I mean? Especially with his destruction of Olenek, who looked pretty good last night, a couple nights ago.
That's right.
You know? But I feel Verdum, since we're talking about that fight, I think Verdum went in there thinking he could do whatever he wants until he found out he couldn't do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
So then plan B, which should have been plan A, is to make it a grappling match. He's on a different level, jiu-jitsu-wise, than Olenek. The problem is you get an exhausted – I don't know what belt he is, but let's just say this. You get an exhausted black belt going with a good purple belt who's not as exhausted – you're going to see a big difference. I'm just saying in class and whatnot. So you get now Verdum crapped out first because it wasn't going, whether it was the strikes that Olenek landed, which he landed some decent ones, or just the anxiety of saying, all right, this is not what I expected standing up. Now it's either him getting anxiety from not landing what he wanted standing up and not going his way. By the time he wanted to make it a jiu-jitsu match, he was dominating him, but he looked already weathered. He looked already weathered. He had a better shot of going in there, doing a flying knee, getting on his back, and just starting from there. Because he would have got a reversal. He would have been on top. If he was on top, I mean, that Kimura almost finished Olenek. Remember that Kimura that Verdum had on him? I don't know.
Yes. Maybe. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, that was close. Yes.
He had. Well, Olenek had to go to his back. To he had to give up the mount. He had to give up being on top to go to his back or else that arm's getting broken off. And he did it. So he knew enough. He was not on the same level in jiu-jitsu as Verdum. Totally different levels, Jimmy.
Yep.
And you've seen it. But when you're so exhausted where you can't keep the back, when you have both hooks in and you're like, all right, this guy's turtling up. It's tiring to keep somebody in if you're weathered. So he's just like, screw this. I'm just going to get back up. He was not – I'm telling you – I think Verdum looked pretty bad, worst I've ever seen him. And Olenek had, you know, he should be happy with his performance because
Olenek came in. You're right, Matt. He was in better shape than normal. He looked smaller than normal. And Verdum had that 2-year layoff, and it's like maybe he lost the weight on purpose, going, I'm going to outspeed this guy because Verdum's just going to try to lay on me, and I'm not going to let him.
You know, listen, hindsight's 20/20. Verdum's had improved striking over the years. But, man, he did not look in shape to me for any number of the reasons we were talking about. anxiety with the stand-up. It's not going his way. By the time he wanted to make it a jiu-jitsu match, he had like half a tank, if less. You know what I mean? So, and he was still doing, he's still dominating him on the floor. You know? So that's a frustrating one. That's going to be a frustrating loss for Olenek, because it's like a fight that he should have, that Verdum literally should have and could have won.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
I don't think we've ever had two guys in the same window like this. So much easier than doing two different windows. I wish every guest was like this. It's great.
It's the first time for everything. Like I called Justin Stubbing Ferguson for the first time ever.
Oh, you did call it. I called a win, but not a stoppage.
I said he was going to knock him out. Brett told me that Tony's never been knocked out. I said I was aware of that, but this was going to be the first time.
What do you think happened to Tony in that last round? He got hit, and he had taken such abuse, and it looked like he almost stutter-stepped. Like, he did something that looked abnormal for a guy. Like, there was something in his eye, but his head...
That's where the orbital bone went, right?
Yeah.
That was probably the pain. I don't think...
Trying to shake it loose?
Yeah, man, who knows what the hell that feels like. I don't know what getting punched in the face feels like, but to have your the orbital bone... That's got to suck,
that's
man.
Serious.
And, you know, he might not seem human. He might seem like he's not human with the shots he takes. But shit, man, at the end of the day, there's only so much you could take.
By the way,
I should introduce you guys. Sorry. Carlos Correa and Lance McMullers Jr. of the Walkout Podcast. I didn't even say your name. Sorry, guys.
I think Lance just walked. I think Lance walked out of the podcast.
The computer is running low on battery, so he went to look for the charger.
There he is. Lance, walk back in. Let me ask you guys. So you're both baseball players. How did you get into this with the MMA podcast?
Well, I fell in love with boxing when I was 5-6 years old because of Felix Tito Trinidad. I'm from Puerto Rico, so the whole family would get together, and the energy, the passion that everybody showed with those fights was unbelievable. I fell in love ever since. Then MMA came in. Anderson Silva came into the UFC in the mid-2000s. Chuck Liddell, the Iceman. Anderson Silva was throughout that 16-fight winning streak at the time. I fell in love with him. He was one of my favorites at the time. And I've been watching MMA and boxing ever since.
Yeah. Do you guys train at all? Either one of you guys train?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we mess around. I mean, it's tough because, you know, I got to be careful with my hands especially. And I've had some arm injuries over the years, so got to be careful. But we both have fun, man. We both enjoy it.
What do you guys train?
We hit the heavy bag. We work the mitts. So I hold the mitts for him. He holds the mitts for me sometimes. We go in the octagon, you know, and we do some wrestling and stuff with the coaches. We love all this stuff, man. We're really passionate about this sport. You know what I mean? So it's baseball. It's the sport that we play. But the sport that we love to watch – It's MMA.
Yeah.
How do you think as ball players too? Because I think MMA or UFC is going to be probably the easiest sport to adapt to no crowd. Baseball, it's like every shot has the crowd in. So maybe for you guys, it won't make a difference. Just the viewer. Do you think people are going to have a hard time adapting to nobody being in any of the shots?
I don't know, man. We absolutely loved watching that fight a couple of nights ago with no one in the stands. I mean, You did kind of like, you know, the energy was with the crowd, and maybe you missed like the big oohs and ahs, but being able to hear Joe and being able to hear DC and John so clearly, and being able to hear the corners and we've been to a couple of fights in person, and we've very fortunately got to sit close. But unless you're sitting close in those fights, you don't get to hear some of these leg kicks and some of these connections these guys are making. So when we were at home the other night, being able to hear those, it took us back to like seeing it in person. And yeah. I loved it. We talked about today how much we love watching that fight with nobody there.
And DC helped some of the guys with his coaching while he was commentating.
yeah.
Some of the guys are saying they could hear DC. So DC is the man, man.
At one point, DC is like, you know, they could hear us. They could hear us. Lance, how did you get involved with the mixed martial arts? You started watching early on too, or?
I did. So actually, my first neighborhood growing up, there was his name was Hank McLeod. He was a heavyweight boxer back in the 90s. He has about 5 pro fights. I think he's like 2-3, maybe 1 knockout. But he lived in my neighborhood. So just from an early age, watching him train, he had a big gym in his garage. So I kind of started mixing it up with him. His son was my age. And I just fell in love with it. I really loved like Oscar De La Hoya growing up. And got into the MMA, very similar to Carlos. Really,
Trinidad beat him, by the way.
Huh? I know. I still think Oscar pulled it off against Pretty Boy Floyd. But I just really fell in love with MMA right when like Chuck Liddell started getting big. I kind of made the transfer over, and then we got drafted together in 2012. And we didn't really know each other that well then, but we kind of bonded over the fight game. We've watched pretty much every fight together since about 2012, 2013.
Isn't it funny? A guy like Hank McLeod, who's 2-3, it's not a particularly noted career, you know, but he literally could kick the shit out of everybody in the neighborhood he lives in.
Like, this guy was massive. He'd be heavyweight. Oh my gosh, he was huge.
What do you think of the possibility? I've liked Cormier, and I mentioned this to Rogan. He goes, no, Cormier's a friend. I don't want this to happen to him. But I would love to see Cormier and Ngannou. And that's being talked about if Stipe isn't ready to fight. I think that would be a very, very interesting matchup.
Dude, will you let me dive in on what I think?
Yeah. Yes.
Go ahead.
All right, so I think there's levels to this game, right? Obviously, we all know that in the MMA sport. Ngannou, as good as he's looked and knocking everybody out, you can see that his striking is not very technical. It's more of a wild, loopy punches that he throws. If you see that sequence he threw against Rozenstruik, Cormier is going under, double leg. He's going to take him down, and he's going to pin him for 25 minutes. I think he needs to do a better job at being more tight with his punches, be more technical, because a great wrestler like Cormier, I think he's going to have no chance. And I know he beat Curtis Blaze, who's also a great wrestler.
And Velasquez.
And Velasquez, and he got him with some good punches. But I think DC, his experience, his expertise, how long he's been fighting the best of the best, I think DC is going to pull that off.
I give DC a chance against anybody except for the fact that he's a little bit older now. Like, he's really good at kind of grabbing a fist and covering distance by doing that, like the way he did against Jones or even against Stipe for a while. He just frustrates you. But I don't know if you can do that against Francis. Like, I don't know if that method of just kind of peppering the fist works against Ngannou. But that's why I'd love to see it, because if DC puts him down, Francis is not getting back up.
If he tries to strike with Ngannou, he's going to get KO. So he's got to go for the takedown from the first second of the fight.
What do you think, Matt?
Well, I mean, he knows that also, but yeah. this is a fight you'd have to look to really see what it could resemble. It would be Daniel Cormier versus Anthony Rumble Johnson, who's if you have to look at anybody that you could compare some power to, it would have to be Rumble Johnson. Yeah. I'm going to say Francis is even more powerful, but Rumble's got those smoother punches that you're talking about, Carlos. He does punch correctly. Mm-hmm. And DC still was able to weather a storm and take him out. No offense to Rumble Johnson. He's the type of guy that he'll shoot his load, and then he's not exactly in the he's in that quick tap club. He'll be like, all right, I tried. And like, you know what I mean? There's my neck. Take it. I tried to knock it out. You don't give a shit. I mean, that's just the way I see it. The thing, though, Carlos, is I agree with you that the technique with Francis could be tightened up a lot. But do you remember – I don't know if you ever watched Pride back in the day, or the Pride fights – do you remember a guy named Bob Sapp?
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
Bob Sapp.
Right, sure.
I'm 25 years old, just for the record.
Well, listen, you could be my kid, basically, Carlos. But listen, Well, now, since you're in the MMA business, I'm going to give you some fights to look up. Check out the Bob Sapp versus Ernesto Hoost. That was like a kickboxing match, I believe. Ernesto, way better as far as the striking goes. World class. He still got overpowered. But, I mean, Francis, who is a clean fighter, he possesses that power. So even with a better striker could outlane him 5-1, that one is going to – it could just – totally void out those five. You know what I mean? He's that powerful. He went in there giving zero fucks and just went in with a flurry. He missed the one left hook. It didn't matter. He was
with the chin up. Also,
we were breaking the fight down a little earlier because we're doing our recap today. And you know, we said like Francis went in there, like you said, no fucks given, man. He went in there and he was like, I'm taking it to this guy, no matter what. This guy's got lightning in his hand, just like I do. But I think he overwhelms guys, and I think that could be something DC that'd be careful about because he's not going to be able to sit there like he does with Jones and pepper the hand. Jones is much more reserved. He wants to pick his shots, especially now he's getting a little older.
He can't stand to trade with Francis.
Francis is going to come at you. That's the way he wants to do it ever since he kind of like lost to Lewis and those hands wouldn't fly. I think he's just going after guys now.
Yeah, when you look at him, like besides the wrestlers, he did beat a boxer in Dos Santos. And a kickboxer like Rosenstrike, like he seems to be leveling everybody the same. But when he goes in kind of flailing like that, even if you're going to capitalize on that, you still might have to take one. In order to capitalize on that.
I would love to see a rematch for Stipe. I mean, you know what I mean? That's what I would love.
Stipe took some good punches off Francis and kept coming. So not everybody can be knocked out. You know what I mean? We saw that. Yesterday, Ferguson, even though they stopped the fight, but he was not going down with those bombs that Justin Gaethje was dropping. And the last three fighters that Gaethje faced, they were out cold.
Yeah.
They didn't even know where they were.
Now, what did you think, because I got my thoughts on it, but I want to hear you guys, of Dana saying that he didn't want to take anything away from Gaethje, but he did mention that he felt that Tony looked slow and maybe the cutting away twice in a month wasn't good for him. And he said he looked a little bit slow and whatnot. Again, taking nothing away from Gaethje. That's what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, we kind of talked about, like I said earlier, I think this should be more of a conversation of the amazing fighter that we literally saw Gaethje like turn into the other night. I mean, he put it all together. He put his conditioning together. He was more patient. He was much more he was picking his shots a little better. And you know, Tony, I mean, he's a grown man. You know, you gotta live and die with your decisions. And he decided to do that. I don't know if he thought because he was on the Ultimate Fighter, the Tough Series, they cut weight very often. But Carlos brought up a good point. You don't fight guys like Justin Gaethje, during the Tough Series. So he mentioned maybe the weight cut and the long camp fighting for Khabib. But I thought this was just a masterclass by Justin. He got saved by the bell at the second, maybe 10 or 15 more seconds.
Yeah.
A different conversation. But those first two rounds, Tony was able to weather the punches and weather the legs, weather the chopping the wood. After that third round started getting going, those headshots, those shots to the legs, it started adding up and just became too much. But I think that Justin wins that fight many times with the way he fought him the other night.
The reason I put all my money on Gaethje was because when I break down the previous fights from Gaethje and I break down the previous fights from Tony, Tony beat Cerrone, a guy that's on a 4-fight losing streak. He beat Pettis. He's won 5 out of the last 13. He beat Kevin Lee, who's lost 4 out of the last 6. And these guys were not at the top of the division at the time. They fought Tony. He's getting tagged by these guys in the first round. So we all know he's a slow starter. But the way that he'll fight, keeping his chin up when he was breaking and going back. And then I look at Gaethje after he fought Poirier with Trevor Whitman telling him, hey, you can still be the same exciting fighter without getting hit as much. And you see him fight James Bick. You see him fight Barbosa. You see him fight Cerrone. He's more of an in-and-out type of guy, picking his punches better. And when I see Tony getting tagged so much by these guys, the level of Gaethje is not the same as the other guys he faced. So that's why I picked Gaethje.
Jimmy, anything?
I was only going to say that I was amazed at Gaethje's patience. Like the fact that he didn't rush in. Like there was a couple of times he had Ferguson hurt. And this is why I credit Gaethje more than thinking Tony was slow. And he didn't rush. It's like he knows how well Tony is in those situations. You notice how well he – and he just didn't rush. And I thought he probably could have TKO'd him a little bit earlier, but I think he wanted to play it really smart, and he avoided rushing in, at least on two different occasions I can remember. And I was like, wow, he's really being patient, almost too patient.
Listen, well, that's a lot of credit goes to Trevor Whitman. I want to bring up the corner work in a second because mm-hmm. That was crucial in this fight.
Yes.
But I agree with Carlos here. I feel that was Tony Ferguson. Now, listen, in the fights that he's winning, he does absorb punishment. And that's part for of his sure. biggest attributes is that he's able to take it. And then people like shit, man, like Lando Vendata, he was landing on him like crazy in that first round. Yeah. But Tony, he breaks guys down. Part of him not being able to do that to Justin was, like you were saying, Carlos, is the levels. And is he was patient. He didn't fight him the same way he fought. Justin Gaethje did not fight him the same way he fought Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier.
100%. He became the complete fighter right in front of our eyes. He made the adjustments.
So when Dana says that, man, he thought that it was, you know, and again, didn't want to take credit away from Justin, and he thought that Tony didn't really look himself. I thought he looked himself. I thought he does that in every one of his fucking fights. Yeah. Oh, what about him turning the back? And, yeah, he does that. He's wacky.
Yeah. He does the Bruce Lee, the powder, and everything. He was smiling. It was Tony, man. It was Tony. Justin was just a masterclass performance in the biggest fight of his life. And in no way you cut it other than maybe adding 20 seconds to the end of the second round, Gaethje dominated almost every aspect of that entire fight.
He was hitting them clean, too. They were clean shots.
They were loud on TV. There was no crowd. They were loud. We posted a reactions video just from like the front, and I'm like grabbing my hair. I can't watch. It was tough for. I'm a Ferguson fan, man. I was willing him to win this fight, bro, and it was a tough scene for me.
We all love Tony. And now that you bring up the Poirier and Alvarez fight, if you look at those fights, even though he lost and he had a different style, he just wanted to get hit and keep going and giving the fans the best fight ever. Alvarez and Dustin had a tough time walking out of the octagon. He was picking those legs apart. And you're talking about this guy. You look at Eddie Alvarez's physique, and he's put together. He's so strong. Justin Gaethje is put – Dustin Poirier is put together. Tony Ferguson is more of a smaller lightweight. He's skinny. He's slim. Those leg kicks, man, they just were too much. I mean
– this is what I liked a lot in this fight, and this stands out to me. And it's good that we brought up those two fights. The last round – the corner work with Trevor Whitman. Holy shit. Now, listen, I'm getting goosebumps. I swear,
me too.
I swear to God, I'm getting goosebumps. Look at my hair on my helm. It's something. They were connected. The other corner, and I don't want to – I'm going to get shit from my coach, Ray Longo, because this might be from him, because I was just talking to Ray Longo, because we were talking about the corner work, and he said, look, there was connect – and then there was disconnect in Tony's corner. And I'm not sure. I'm friends with Eddie Bravo. I'm not shitting on him. He would have been way better utilized if he was fighting Habib, Tony, because it was not. So you look into – I didn't see any urgency in the corner of Tony Ferguson when he's down how many rounds?
After that first round?
They're afraid of him.
They came back.
I'm not being a dick. I think, listen, just like this guy, Tony, he's a wild man. He rehabbed his own leg. He didn't get it done by a physical a sports guy. You know what I'm saying? This guy, nobody in the corner is going to tell him what the fuck to do. And that's what I seen in that. I mean, you have Eddie Bravo asking for an Minari role. How about an Minari role
in the third
round? Like, you know, and I understand that's a decent, you know, guys could use that. But fuck, man. I mean, then you go to the other corner. And again, about those two fights that we brought up, Justin is giddy. He's giddy in the fourth round, in between fourth and fifth. He's oh man, he's having a good time. Trevor, he brought him back. He goes, hey, he goes, listen. He goes, remember the last time you got too comfortable? He's like, stay alert. And he brought him back. It was huge.
After the second or first, he said, hey, 10% less of those punches, man. You're throwing them too big. Because even in the first a couple rounds, Tony was still kind of walking him down, and Gaethje was on the back pedal, even though he was landing some good shots and hitting those legs. But Tony was ducking under some of those big, big combos and punches that Justin was throwing. But after that third round, man, which is when he said to start going for the rolls, because shit was against the wall at that point. Justin, listen, man, it was awesome to see. When I saw he came back to the round, we were – And he said, hey, good boxing that first round. I said, oh,
that was, yeah, Rashad Holloway, his boxing coach. He came back after the first round, and he's beautiful boxing, Tony. That was beautiful.
Eddie Bravo, I believe, said that.
No, Rashad Holloway, his boxing coach. Yes, 100% sure. Rashad Holloway.
I'm going to call him. I was just watching it again. We got to watch this again.
Eddie Bravo walked in the later rounds, but the first round was Rashad Holloway who walked in his boxing coach, and he said, beautiful boxing, Tony, beautiful boxing.
Eddie was
behind the cage, and I believe he said beautiful boxing behind the cage. But, hey, Carlos, I don't want to draw swords. We just met each other. Put the baseball back down.
It's all love, brother.
Another reason he might have looked slow is because Gaethje got his respect very early. Like, I think that's another reason he might have not seemed like himself. Like, I mean, Lando Venata is dangerous, but I don't think he hits like Justin Gaethje. So, you know, maybe he looks a little bit more comfortable getting taking a few shots in the first round against Venata than he does Gaethje. I don't know if that was Tony being slow or just Gaethje earned his respect fast.
And like Lance was just saying, I loved after, I believe it was the third round, I'm not sure of the round, when he said the takeoff, hey, stop trying to kill him with every shot. Take off 10%, hit him with 30%. Like, I'm telling you, from not only being in there as a competitor, but being in there as a corner guy, that was some of the best corner work because they were so in sync with each other, man. Yeah, I love that. That Trevor Whitman was fucking awesome. Yeah, he might not be the loudest guy, but he's getting clear. They were in sync with each other, man.
Yeah.
And that might have made the difference in this fight. Well, two things. One, he's telling him that because it could get him exhausted with putting everything into these punches, but it's also discouraging when you hit a guy with everything you had and he keeps coming. Yeah. So, I mean, I can't wait to get Trevor Whitman on. We're going to pick his brain about this.
Coaching is a great part of this game. If you look at the Canelo fight against Triple G, the second one, he goes back to the corner and his coach in Spanish tells him, you're not going to knock this guy out. You need to be more technical. You need to work on the jab. You can be throwing power punches all the time because you're not going to knock him out. Everybody can get knocked out. And then Canelo Alvarez adjusted and ended up winning that fight, listening to his coaching. So coaching is a big part of this game, and Trevor Whitman showed it last night.
With no fans, though, we really got to see it, which is, you know, something that we're not privy to all the time. As a competitor, as a corner guy, you're more used to these conversations and hearing these type of things and being able to recognize good coaches versus not great advice during the fights. Us as fans, it's, you know, they're cutting a Joe or they're cutting a John because it's so loud in there or, you know, whatever the case may be. But we got to hear these conversations, and it's eye-opening for fans around MMA to be able to hear these things and really understand how important having a great corner is.
And I don't feel – and again – it's rough with me always because I have personal relationships with these guys. I know Eddie Bravo a long time. And I feel Eddie's definitely the right guy if he's fighting Khabib. If that fight was with Khabib, we know where a lot of that's taking place. And Eddie's a fucking wizard on the floor. That's great. You know what I mean? But Tony, if it's not broke, why fix it? He's on an eight-year win streak. What was it? How many fights?
11 eight-year win streak, I think.
Yeah, 11
12 fights.
Fights
12.
Oh, my bad. 11. I'm sorry.
Khabib's 11, I think, in the division because he fought the catch weight. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, the point is, up until now, why change it, man? Why change? Why? Who the fuck does he have to listen to? He's doing it. He's winning. He's winning, killing everybody.
Took the word now, out of Carlos's mouth.
Maybe it's time to take some. It's good to have more eyes on this thing. You know what I'm saying? Because when you're in there, in it. Like, he's in there. I mean, the stool's down. He's pushing it. Nobody's telling this guy anything, I think. And it's part of the reason he's a fucking savage, and you don't want to take that away from him. You don't want to tame him, but you have to have somebody that could communicate with him in a fight like this.
Because
that's
a
huge difference, man.
I was saying on our podcast, our first episode, stylistically, I much preferred the Ferguson versus Khabib because I thought that Tony could maybe be the one guy to be able to go into Khabib's world and get on the ground and kind of grapple with him and throw some jiu-jitsu in there and make Khabib stand up, and Tony could use all those tools that he has. But like you said, man, Carlos called it perfectly. He said, this guy's been winning for 8 years in a row. He's not going to make the adjustments when he gets hit all these fights. He's standing in front of guys, and Justin is going to make him pay for it. And you can't be more right, man. That's
He's
what
been
happened.
Keeping his chin up for 7 years on that 12-fight winning streak. You're not going to change it in another 8 weeks.
And it's funny, it's probably going to be Justin Khabib next. Justin said, that's who I want. The fight I've been wanting to see, and we have to wrap up, guys, just because we have Walt Harris, I think, ready to go. I wanted to see Conor against Justin, but nobody wants to deal with Justin. But now that he's got the interim belt, people have to deal with him. I would like to see that fight more than Justin Habib and more than Conor Habib.
Man, I fucking disagree. I want to see Justin Gaethje. I think it's more fascinating Justin Gaethje versus Habib. Who was able to look at Justin Gaethje's wrestling, man? He just doesn't use it. He uses it to stay up. Who's laying? When's the last guy that got
Chuck Liddell on him?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think it is a way more intriguing fight with him versus Justin versus Habib. Could Habib do what he does to everybody, take him down? Because he was going to take Tony down. It was a matter of Tony could do anything off his back. But shit, man, this could he take Justin down? If Justin gets out and gets up, could he put Habib away? I mean, listen, I am waiting. I'm excited about this.
I want to see Conor go fight Masvidal or Diaz 3, and I want to see Gaethje fight Habib. And then if he loses, maybe we even give Tony another shot. I mean, you're giving dudes title shots off losses in 3.5-year layoffs. Might as well.
It's funny. I don't want to see Conor fight at welterweight again. And I have no desire. And I know I'm in the minority, too. Like, I don't want to see the Diaz 3, even though the first two fights were like, I don't care about that. I would much rather see Masvidal fight Leon Edwards, which, again, is nowhere near the fight that Conor Leon is for the UFC. I'm sorry, Conor Jorge. Yeah, I would much rather see Edwards get that fight with Masvidal, but we'll see. Hey, you listen, guys, man, very fun talking to you. I'm sorry we don't have longer. It's just,
we had a good time, man. We're having fun talking to guys at night time. Usually it's just us two screaming in the house and our wives are kind of listening sometimes.
Hey, so. I know we have to go, but you said about Gaethje and Khabib. Remember, Gaethje hasn't fought a wrestler like Khabib. So
never, right.
The level of wrestling Khabib is, we've never seen anything like it, so.
Well, that's so fascinating.
I don't think that fight goes like Cormier, Volkan, Uzdemir, but I don't think it turns out well for Gaethje in that fight. You know, I don't think it's a second round tap, but I don't think that fight goes that well for Gaethje.
He's got holes in his wrestling too.
Hey, Carlos, but when's the last time Habib fought a wrestler though?
Nobody wants to arrest.
Nobody's
going to arrest him. Brother, Sambo shit, bro.
He's been on this Sambo nonstop. Google's a bad thing.
All right, Carlos Correa and Lance McMullers. Thank you, guys. Lance McMullers Jr. Your podcast is called The Walkout. And where can people get it? And when do you put it out? When does it come out?
We're on our socials. My social, Lance McCullers 43. His social, Team CJ Correa 1. We have the Walkout Podcast Instagram as well. It's all over. You can't miss it.
YouTube, Spotify, Apple.
We're trying to put things out as fast as possible, but you know, we're just two cats trying to mix it up. So we're having fun, but that's the goal. Have fun and just kind of give our take on an amazing sport from a baseball perspective.
Well, it's really great talking to you guys. I'm sure your podcast is good. You both love the sport. So we'll definitely talk to you again, we hope.
All right, guys.
Thank you, guys. Yeah.
All right. Pleasure, man. Thank you, guys.
Take care, guys.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Oh, I love seeing Walt. What's up, buddy?
How are you, brother?
So excited to watch you fight.
Yeah, how does it feel? The fight's finally here.
Oh, man, I'm pumped, man. I've been waiting on this day for a long time, man. Been training for a long time, so I'm excited to get in there and do what I do.
Was it pushed back? It was again pushed back the second time because of the virus, right? When was the second fight supposed to happen?
April the 11th was supposed to be our reschedule, and then it got canceled, and now we're up, man. So I'm excited.
How are you feeling that you're actually like? Is it hard to focus on it, or is it like a godsend to have something to focus on?
Man, it's a blessing to have something to focus on. Definitely. I've been looking at it with the silver lining. That's the kind of guy I am. I've been looking at it like, you know, with no crowd, it takes a lot of the extra added pressure off of me, you know, because fight week, you know, barring with all that happened with my daughter, man, would have been tough having to, you know, constantly run down that road with people talking and hugging and saying they're sorry and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It kind of gives me the incentive of, you know, knowing that I'm just going to work. I'm going to do what I love to do and, you know, not any outside distractions. So it's going to be fun.
How did it feel watching the fights? I mean, I assumed you watched the fights the other night.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How did it feel watching it without an audience? I mean, personally, I loved it.
I thought it was awesome, man. You could hear everything, bro. Like, the Gaethje and Ferguson fight was insane. I mean, you could hear every punch, and you could hear the corners. You can hear the announcers. So I might even heard some guys said that they could hear the announcers during the fight, which is pretty dope. You know what I mean? I'm always ragging on DC because after the fight, I'll listen to the commentary and he'll have something like slick to say, and I'll mess with him when I see him. So I'll be messing with him kind of, you know, real time. So it'll be pretty cool.
And what do you think too, in your division, that the Ngannou Rosenstrike was just, I mean, and I thought Rosenstrike actually, cause you're fighting Alistair this Saturday. I thought Alistair won that fight and that was an unfair, I mean, it was just tough luck and bad timing, but I felt bad for Overeem. I thought he won that fight.
Yeah, for sure. He dominated that fight, but I mean, it's the highest level, man. You take 1 second lapse and it can be over, especially at heavyweight. With the Rosenstruck fight and Ngannou, I kind of saw that coming. You know what I mean? I knew Rosenstruck. You know, he's got talent, but I felt like he rose so fast. It was a little bit too soon for that fight for him. I worked with Francis a little bit before the pandemic hit, and I mean, he looked good three, four weeks ago. You know, actually longer than that, but. You know, I just kind of thought that it would go that way. I didn't see it 20 seconds, you know, but right. I felt like he would definitely beat him by knockout.
And even if you see it at 20 seconds, it's hard to make that prediction out loud because if you're wrong, a fighter feels so disrespected. Like there's no way to out loud say like, yeah, I think he'll last maybe 30 seconds. Even if you think that, you got to kind of keep it to yourself.
For sure.
Your last fight was fucking beautiful, bro. When you're jumping knee and it was like, what the hell? What did you think of Olenek, like, just taking out Verdum, like, beating Verdum?
Man, that was great. So, and it's a double-edged sword for me, in a way, as a competitor, because I fought Verdum, albeit it was on, like, 45-minute notice.
Yeah,
that's important. But I still felt like, you know, wow. You know, then I watched Alexi go in there and do that, and I'm like, that's awesome for me because he beat him.
It does.
And it's like, I want another crack at Verdum, you know, with a real camp, you know. I feel like I could beat him.
Yeah, it should be mentioned that you did take that fight on literally 45 minutes notice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we talked to Dean Thomas, too, and he was like one of those guys like, hey, man, you've got to seize this opportunity. So it might be Dean Thomas. I'm going to blame Dean Thomas for that hiccup.
Yeah, Dean's my guy, man. Like, when he tells me to do something, I use it on bad knowledge. I trust him a lot.
So what happened with that Verdum fight? Why was that on such short notice? I don't remember.
Derek Lewis had a back injury like right before or the day of the fight. And we kind of joked around in the locker room about it. Like, hey, they offer us Verdum, we're taking it. And my coaches thought I was kidding. I was like, hell yeah, I'm taking it if they come in there. And I kid you not, within 30 minutes, I was warming up and I hear, Walt, sit down. You know, the fights are being moved back because of Derek's injury. And I looked at my coach at the time and I go, hey, man, I'm telling you right now, if they come in here and offer me this fight, I'm taking it. And he goes, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, dude. Dana and them come in with cameras, Mick and all them busting my locker room. And before they could even ask, I'm standing up going, yes. And he goes, you don't even know what we're going to say. And I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what you're about to say. I won't want it.
Now, who were you supposed to fight that night?
I was supposed to fight Mark Gobbear that night. Oh. And we ended up fighting the next month in New York City. When all of the stuff happened with the guy driving the cart, it was crazy. It was a crazy, like, 2 months, man.
Yeah,
we had the shooting in Las Vegas. We had the Las Vegas shooting the night I fought Verdum. And then the next month, I went to New York to re-fight Gobbear. And freaking Gobbear and me, that fight, the cart, the guy drove the truck down the run path, trail.
Oh, I thought I'm sorry. I thought you meant the problem with in the basement with Conor. You mean it was an actual terrorist attack?
Yeah. The terror was an attack on that running path in New York. Remember, the guy drove the rental truck.
Oh, shit.
It was a crazy month, man. It was weird. I remember I landed in New York right when that was happening. And I remember seeing black SUVs flying down the interstate. It was crazy, man. It was just like, I don't know. It's weird. It was a weird time.
Say something interesting, too. Sorry, Matt. You just said that the relief of people not being there, because people mean well when they hug you and they say they're sorry. Of course, they're being loving. But after a while, is it something that you go, like, I know you mean well, but it's too much. Like,
It can be, man. I mean, especially with fight week. Like, I like to lock in and focus on positive things, you know, during my fight week. And, you know, although I never stop thinking about my daughter, it's just that emotional roller coaster of people constantly, you know, telling you their feelings. It makes you think about it, whether you want to or not. So when I found out that there were going to be no fans, I was like, man, that actually is going to work out better for me. And because I played my walkout in my head with the crowd and, like, you know, how I would really react. And in your mind, you tell yourself, oh, I'll be fine. But you never know until you actually are going through it. And if it was a packed house and I see people with the shirts and the blue ribbons, I might not respond how I think I'm really going to respond. So with no crowd, I'm like, shoot, I'm going to cage. You know, my daughter's walking behind me. I'm going in there to get a job done. So,
yeah, and with Overeem throwing those giant knees at you, you want to be focused.
Exactly. This guy's dangerous. So you want to be 110% locked in, you know, at all times.
Yeah.
You know, you said that Overeem is someone that you've modeled your career after.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're fighting someone that you respect so much, I don't want to say looked up to, maybe looked up to, you know, you admire his career. How is that mentally? Is it a little
mentally
bit like a fight?
I mean, I'm a competitor, man, you know, and I feel like it's my time. You know, as much respect as I have for him, I am trying to take him out, you know, because I know he's trying to do the same thing to me. And it's all in the ramifications of the sport. You know what I mean? I'm going to fight him. I'm going to give him my best because I feel like he deserves that. He's done so much in this sport. He's meant so much to my career. And, you know, me as a fan as well, I respect him in that aspect. So me giving him anything less than my best is a disrespect to me. So that's kind of how I approach it, you know, how I've trained and how I've worked to get to this point. And, you know, like I said, I'm fighting for more than just the fight now. It's for my daughter, man. So I'm driven by something different. So I got to go in there and give my all, no matter what, no matter where the chips fall.
Does it change your, when anything, I mean, I can't think of anything as awful as that, but does it change your perception on what fighting means or on what a win means or what a loss means?
Yeah, for sure. It used to be, man, for me, fighting was about, like I said, competing and being the best at what I do. It's a macho bravado thing when you first start. It's like, you know, hey, we two men, I'm not going to let you beat my ass. I want to go in there and show you I'm better than you. And then when you realize that you're actually, you know, making your way through the sport and you're getting better, what you end up wanting to do is win a title, you know, and be a champion. But for me now, it's not. So it's about that always. You know, it's about the making money. I love making money. You know, but for me, at the end of the day, it's about putting up my best foot forward for my daughter and showing people that you can go through the worst adversity in your life and still find a way to succeed and push and chase your dreams. And I think she's motivated me more than I've ever been. I train hard all the time and try to, you know, set myself apart from most heavyweights or what people think most heavyweights are. But with this, it's just giving me something extra, man. It's crazy. It's hard to explain at times.
Speaking of kids, I heard you do a lot of, like as a father, I want to watch your TikTok videos. And I'm not on TikTok. I heard you're all over that.
Bro.
I love that shit.
Bro, the quarantine has got me so hyped, bro. I literally hated TikTok. And then we went into quarantine, and I was like, man, I'm bored as crap. So I had the app, but I never really went on it. And then I started scrolling, and man, some of this stuff on here is just genius. So I said, you know what? Let me jump in and see, try my hand at it. And I just kind of have fun with it. It's something to do with my kids sometimes, or, you know, when I'm just kind of bored, I'll just jump on there and record something crazy. And people seem to like it. You know, I'm getting better at it. It took me a little bit to learn how to use it and edit it and all that stuff. But, you know, I'm having fun with it, man.
When you watch it, you're right. There are people. You realize how many funny people. Like, there are some really creative people. Very. That, like, that dumb song by The Weeknd. Like, I never liked The Weeknd, and now it's all over TikTok. Dun, 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 and I love it. Like,
same watching what coach, people, man. You're the same as my coach. Hated The Weeknd, but he loves that bright light, shiny light song.
Yeah.
You know, he ate that TikTok up. So, you know, we just having fun, man. Just trying to, you know, stay positive and keep pushing forward, man. So TikTok's been really good for me mentally, you know, especially days I'm having off days or stressed.
Are you lucky and not lucky? Are you glad in a way that during this pandemic, the guy you have to train for is primarily a striker? I wonder if your training is a lot better now than it would be for a jiu-jitsu guy.
Well, yeah, but the secret, now that, you know, things are calming down, I ain't stopped training, man. We've been grinding, bro. We've been locked in, bro. So I'm working on every aspect of my game, man. My coach Chris is a genius, man. I think the more I progress and Eric progresses, Eric Anders, I think that he's going to get a lot more notoriety for just how great of a mind he is. Chris Conley is a special coach, and we have an extremely really great bond, you know. It's a lot like myself and Dean Thomas. When I was at Top Team, Dean was my go-to guy. You know, Dean was the guy who was more hands-on with me. Me and him are very like-minded. We spent a lot of time just sitting on the mats and dissecting fighting. And that's kind of what me and Coach Chris are. We've always had that relationship my whole career, me and Coach Chris. I was just at another gym. But me and him always have been close, and he's always helped me with different aspects of my game. So we've been doing that since the pandemic hit. We were in Vegas right before it hit, training together real hard. So it's just been a great marriage, man. And we grind it, man. Coach Chris is about his business. He don't stop training, man. Every day.
Walt, we were talking about it earlier, and this is great. I love the way you're talking about your coach, because you really have to be – listen, you're going to war, man. You're going to battle when you're in that cage. You have to have somebody that you trust. You trust what they're saying to you in the corner. Exactly. You have another pair of eyes, and you trust him because he knows you in and out.
Yeah.
With that fight with Ferguson versus Gaethje, I can't say enough about Trevor Whitman.
Unbelievable.
Did you see that corner work? They were just so in sync.
They were synced up, bro. It was beautiful to watch. You know, that fight for me, Tony Ferguson he's at the top of the top for me.
Yes.
No matter what the outcome was, that dude's heart is on a whole nother level.
Yeah.
And Gaethje showed me something that I kind of already knew was in him. I've been a fan of his since he was in World Series of Fighting, he's just a stud, and he took it to another level the other night, man. It was impressive. It was super impressive.
I think a lot of that has to do with his coach, not just the training they're putting in, but in the fight itself. I can't get over that last round when Justin was just giddy, and Trevor had to just bring him back and be like, hey, remember the last time you got too comfortable?
Yeah.
And Justin, right, without even missing a beat, because he's like, yeah, I lost twice. Like, he knew. They were right there. He brought him back, and then he went on to the way it finished. And I'm telling you, every time I talk about it, I get goosebumps.
Yeah, man.
I felt like I was in it. I felt it was so great.
And it's cool because you could hear it all.
Yes.
You could absorb it all. It's almost like we're really sitting in the cage with him, or we're in the corner with him. I think that's the best part of no fans, man. It's going to give casual fans a real inside look at what we deal with in those corners, in between those rounds, and I think you know, it's special, man. The UFC is really doing something bigger than just putting on sports again. It's giving people an inside look at the life of a guy who's putting everything on the line for one moment. You know what I mean? I think that's something to be said. You know, it's special, especially with all these times we're going through, man. You got guys that are putting their lives on the line, not only to you know, to further their careers, but to give people some solace, and it's got layers, man. I'm a deep thinker, man. So I'll pull back all the layers when I see things, man. And I'm just excited to be a part of this organization, and I'm grateful for what Dana's doing for us.
Before I let you go, what did you do before you fought?
I played ball, of course, but I mean, I was a furnace remover for about 7 or 8 years, man. And
I can see you lifting the fucking couch or something. No problem.
It was insane.
Put it on your back.
I had some moves, man, that were just terrifying, and I'm glad I don't have to do that anymore. Thank God.
How much did it suck when there be a little guy on the crew with you? Like, you know, if it's you and some 5'6" guy, you're doing the heavy work.
Oh, why, for sure. I had a guy, we called him Spider-Man, and he was a rock climber, but he was our truck organizer, and this dude could pack a truck like I've never seen, bro. He could take two houses and shove them in a 128-footer, bro.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this dude was called him. His name was David, but he was unbelievable. He was tiny, but he could lift. I mean, it's always a good memory to think about those days, because that keeps me working hard, so I don't have to go back to it.
You're not going back there, dude, especially after that flying knee on Olenek's head.
We'll see if we can get another one of those next on Saturday.
Dude, how much did it suck for you to move furniture with roaches on it? My friend's family owned a place, and they got roach infested by the tenant, and the movers dropped the furniture because there was roaches all over it.
I had a nest. I've seen a couple nests in not the real wood, it's the fake wood. You know what I'm talking about? Press board. We had press board that got wet, and we went to pick it up, and it exploded, and roaches came just flying out, bro. It was the most disgusting thing ever. I don't miss those moves at all.
No.
that'll get you up to do the road work in the morning.
Oh, for sure. I'm gonna hit a couple miles right away, bro, just to stay away from that. I'm grateful for it though, because it taught me some things for sure.
Well, we're happy this fight is happening. Everybody loves you, and we're happy to see you fighting again. And this Saturday, you and Overeem, the main event. Very exciting. Fight, and good luck, man. We hope
thank you so much, man. Matt, it's always good to see you, bro.
You too, buddy.
I'm a big fan, Jim, dude. You're a funny dude, bro.
Oh, thank you all. Thank you.
Quarantines, I've seen a lot of the stuff, bro. So, you know, I'm not trying not to fan out. Like, I'm trying to keep it low key, and like, you know.
Thank you, man.
But, hey, I appreciate pleasure, you guys man. So much. Hey, thank y'all.
Whether the social distancing is done or not, when I see you, I'm hugging you.
Bro, you already know, bro. I need one of those big massive bear hugs. I want double unders and everything, bro.
We love you, Walt Harris, bro. We'll
take care, buddy.
See you Saturday.
Right. See y'all soon.
All right, good luck, Walt. Take care.
A great guy, man.
Yeah, what a great guy in the UFC than Walt Harris.
I'll tell you, every time I see the guy, it's the same thing. Just a big smile, and then I'm a hugger. So I'm going in, and I'm hugging that dude. I really like that guy a lot, you know? So, and he's an intelligent guy, man. Intelligent guy.
Jimmy, I'm fascinated. Whenever guys, like the movers, like I'll never forget watching that sofa get dropped with roaches on it. And I'm like, these movers have to put up with shit. It would never occur to me that they're dealing with people's dirt, bed bugs, you know,
I like that you brought up, to ask what he'd done before, because I knew he played ball, but I didn't know that about the moving and whatnot of having to move furniture and stuff like that. As a fighter, like, you remember what you did before. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like me with the security guard shit. I'm like, yo, you don't. It's such a great motivator. You know what I mean? When, like, you don't really have a net. You know what I mean? When you're like, there's no plan B, and I'm not going back to that. It does motivate you to get your work in.
You know, you're right. I drove a forklift, and this is what a humble guy Walt is. I say, what did you do before? And of course he played ball, but he talks about moving longer. He's like, I played ball, but I was a mover. Like he goes to something else as opposed to just talking about the glorious job.
Well, I mean, you know what happens if you ever couldn't fight anymore. If you say, oh, you got to go back to play ball, that wouldn't be so bad. You know what I mean? But you start, that's what sticks out in your head is the shitty ass job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100% the shitty jobs you've had.
But I want to talk a little bit about some of the fights before we get out of here, because it's been a great show so far, Jimmy.
Amazing. I love those guys. I love Carlos and Lance. We're great. The Walkout podcast and Walt Harris, of course, is Walt Harris.
They were fun to talk to. They were knowledgeable.
You know? Yeah, they loved it. You tell they loved the sport.
And they had a good sense of humor, too. But a couple of things. Carla Esparza versus our friend, Karate Hottie, Michelle Waterson. It was a split decision. I'm okay with the decision, Jimmy. And we love Michelle Waterson.
Yeah.
I felt that she did not do enough to earn that fight. Carla, she did more. I mean, whether she did anything on the ground or not, she still got the takedown. There was not enough I think she probably landed better on the feet too. I think that what the shame is, I think Michelle has the ability to put her foot where she wants it. She has all these techniques, but it was almost kind of like the question I asked when she was on with us. Like, do you feel it's frustrating. Or do you feel you're going to be a little hesitant with letting your strikes go, knowing Caller wants to put you down
on the ground?
And
yeah,
I think that's kind of what we saw. It's hard to get your timing off, knowing this girl's going to look to blitz and go underneath. And she did a few blitzes that she went off on. Yep. And then I think the reason why you're not seeing Michelle counter is because she goes, okay, the second I go back at her, she's going to look to shoot. But she doesn't shoot. She just goes on, unleashes a fury of punches, and some get through because you're thinking she's going to do something else. So, listen, it was a frustrating fight for Michelle. And it,
sure.
And I can understand her being a little frustrated with that. And if it would have went her way, I've seen worse decisions.
Sure. But
I was, it was the way it went, I was okay with that.
By the way, this is why you got to love Dana. Uriah Hall, Jacare, of course, canceled because Jacare and two of his cornermen, I think, tested positive for COVID. And they're getting paid anyway. Dana said they're getting paid anyway, which is great because fighters will at least know that if they're willing to come and fight, that something that is so beyond people's control is not going to cost them, you know, all that money they put into camp. So I'm real. What a nice decision. That's great that they did that. Yeah,
they do the right thing.
Yes.
Anthony Pettis versus Donald Cerrone. It felt like a sparring match to me. I was watching.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, you know, I enjoy it. Yeah, I thought Pettis. I thought Pettis definitely won. I thought Cowboy looked really good in the third, if I remember correctly. But I thought 29-28 was fine.
It was good. It was funny right afterwards. He's like, no, that was a punch I hit you with. And meanwhile, it was an eye poke. They were having a friendly discussion. He's like, man, that eye poke. He goes, no, that was a punch. Run it back. And then DC and Joe are like, I don't think he's going to allow us to want us to run that back. But I don't know. Listen, who knows what kind of difference it made at that point. I mean, but the thing is, I agree with the decision. Yeah, Anthony Pettis, you know, he outpointed him, you know. What else? What other fights? Oh, Calvin Kattar versus Jeremy Stephens. Much respect to Jeremy Stephens, the way he came out like a fucking savage, a beast. But I remember watching it, and I'm like, he is looking great. He's doing what Jeremy Stephens does. Shows no fear.
He looked great.
But I remember seeing Calvin in those exchanges, and where people can get panicky when they're pressured like that.
Yeah.
Never saw Calvin get flustered. Get that anxiety of, where's the punch? He was rolling with shit, coming back when he had to, getting back on the bike a little to get some space. And then when it was just me and my wife. My kids were running around. But I was telling him, I go, look at the straight right he's doing. Look at the measured straight right. I go, that lands. I go, you know, shit. And you know, my wife's undefeated kickboxer.
Yes.
She had one fight. But anyway, I can talk to her. So, you know,
but it's always not the best part of it. Here's the best part of your wife kickboxing. There's two parts. If she's out without you and someone gives her a hard time, she can defend herself. But most importantly is if you're watching UFC, she'll sit down and be able to watch it, and you won't have to convince her to watch UFC. She probably likes to watch fights.
I tell her, I go, you are a combat athlete. She's like, I had one kickboxing match. I go, an amateur. I go, it doesn't matter. You got in there under the lights and you fought. But anyway, me and my wife, we could watch the fights for sure. So, you know, and then, man, Calvin, when he started landing, he started throwing great combinations. Yeah. And they were slick. And I'm like, and I thought it was going to go the way I predicted. That third, I go, he's going to catch up to him by the third. But he caught him a little sooner. And I can't say enough about Calvin Kattar. I think he's just looking awesome. And I think he's a very down-to-earth guy. He's like, look, I'm starting to put this all together, and these guys are going to be in trouble. And it looks like that. It looks that way.
It definitely does.
I can't wait to see what next for him. That fight was exactly what we expected out of that fight. You know what I mean?
It really was, yeah.
And again, Jeremy Stephens, I mean, look, he got taken out, but that guy, there's no retreat, no surrender with that dude. You know what I mean? He's going forward. And I think of Jeremy Stephens, I'm still smiling because the guy is – talk about just going out on your shield, man. That dude just don't – I love it.
I think he has lost four straight, or he's winless in four. But it doesn't matter. I'll still watch him. It's a guy like Justin Gaethje. Like when he loses like an animal in a fist fight. Like guys like that, you always want to see them do well, but you'll always watch them even if they take a couple of losses because their fights are always exciting. He's never in a fight that sucks, ever.
Jimmy, before I forget – and you know I could be forgetful.
That's okay. We all can.
We have to mention the great George St. Pierre being inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. If I had an applause button, I'd hit it. I think George is one of the best who ever fought, And he's such a class act. And knowing George the way I do, he's such a nice guy. Yeah. I mean, that word gets used a lot with a lot of people. Oh, he's a nice guy. George is like a sweet guy. Like, yeah, but he's a bad, bad dude in the octagon. And you'd never know it by meeting him and shaking his hand and talking to him. He's soft-spoken. I ran into George at Hensel Gracie's Academy. It was over the – that was probably a few months ago, whenever it was. And we had nothing but handshakes and hugs and
good,
talking. And he's such a good guy. I'm so happy for him. Obviously, it was inevitable. Everybody knew he was going in. But, I'm happy for the guy. And I think he's just such a great guy. And, you know, one of the best
ever. I agree. I'm happy for him too. And I'm looking forward. Like, by the time you and I talk, we have another card to cover. On Wednesday, we're going to cover Teixeira and Anthony Smith, as well as some more talk about Walt Harris and Overeem. And there's a bunch of really, really good fights to cover on the next episode. And if you want to see the Chipperson podcast, there's a new one up. And listen, thank you to Walt Harris. And I really enjoyed Carlos and Correa and Lance. I should probably have his name in front of me. I really suck as a host.
Wait, you're talking about – oh, you're talking about our guests?
Our guests, yeah, and Lance McCullers.
McCullers. I like those guys. I could talk to those guys again. They were pleasant.
They were great. They were
fun. I would definitely talk to them again.
Yeah, me too.
Jimmy, before I let you go, what time are the fights on Wednesday? Because they're going to hear – are they going to be able to hear our podcast before the fights?
That's a good – I'm sure they are. I mean, there's no way they'll do them because our podcast comes out pretty early. I'm going to guess that they're 8 o'clock. Let's see. Hold on now. Oh, 9 o'clock. Okay.
All right, Jimmy. So, I mean, listen, but that card, again, like you said, it's Anthony Smith versus Glover Teixeira. Did I kill his name? I love Glover.
Glover Teixeira, yeah.
Ben Rothfall versus
OSP, yes.
Yes. Of course, we just had Alexander Hernandez on, and he's fighting versus Drew Dober. Ray Borg versus Ricky Simone. And then Carl Robinson versus, I love this Italian. Marvin Vettori, who is that dude is good. He's really good. We haven't seen enough of him. Why don't we get Marvin on? Oh, he's got a fight coming up. We'll get him on after. Listen, I can't wait, Jimmy. Then we got fights on Saturday. I'm so happy.
Yeah, I'm very, very psyched too. Yes, I'm very psyched.
Bike rides, Uno games, VR, I love it all. What? Ozark, I've been watching Ozark. And I've been watching Vikings, Jimmy.
Yes, you have.
The sixth season just came out. Jimmy. I miss you. All right, listen. I will talk to you on Wednesday. I had a hell of a good time talking to you today. And guys, in the upcoming weeks, I want Trevor Whitman on. Can we have him on next week on Monday's show? I know there's going to be winners on these shows that cards coming up. We have to talk to a lot of people. I want to talk to Trevor Whitman. Do I have to call him by myself? I'll talk to him off air. I want to fucking talk to this guy. I love this corner work. Sorry, Jimmy.
Don't be sorry. You're right,
Jimmy.
Yeah,
4 shots of espresso today because I'm just hyped up.
That's okay. You sound good,
Jimmy. I'm going to talk to you by Wednesday, buddy.
Yes, you will, and talk to you soon, man. And enjoy your week.
You too, brother. Take care, everyone.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.